So this is how I fixed it in my head.
Okay.
So Turnip Head goes, does his thing, and then he comes back, and they just have a three-way. I mean, like, you want to solve love triangles?
You just made me heen at that. I was like... Like, we see lots of shooting star references, but also these shooting stars become the heads of these bodies in these dancing type rituals. And so out of the carpet surrounding the Witch of the Waste, triggered obviously by the lever and these light bulbs and whatever, they start doing this weird dance. She can't move. It's like, cut away.
Right.
Now we're in the atrium where Magician Sullivan is.
Right. And so you see this other old lady, which this is what's great about this movie, is that there's a lot of very powerful older women.
It might not pass the Bechdel test.
Right.
But it's still pretty lady heavy.
Right. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mrs. Sullivan.
Did I say that wrong? Bechdel test?
Bechdel.
Bechdel Myers.
I always get that wrong, applauders. And I'm sorry. And it's a broken part of my brain.
That's okay.
Bechdel Myers test.
Yeah. So she comes into this, like, an ideal green room where you got, like, it's kind of like a greenhouse, but you have, like, all of these plants, like, mm-hmm. like shoved together.
Mm-hmm. It's a greenhouse atrium sort of situation.
Yeah. And so Mrs. Sullivan is sitting, and there's another chair, and she asks...
Well, she's in a wheelchair.
Oh, she is. That's right.
Yeah, and she's like, you want to take a seat? And Sophie is so startled. She's like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you take a chair with your enemy.
Right. And so Sophie sits down, and they start talking about how he was, you know, a prodigy until he went ahead and let a fire demon eat his heart. And, you know, the
Does
witch...
Does she say that? Sullivan says that?
Mm-hmm. And she even said that that's what happened to the Witch of the Waste until she, you know, and
if like, if he isn't careful, that's what's going to happen to him. What happened to the Witch of the Waste?
Right, he's going to kind of be corrupted because it's kind
of what the hell happened to her heart then?
What happened to her fire?
Okay, Sullivan says if Hal isn't careful, what's going to happen to him is what has already happened to the Witch of the Waste. She won't have a heart anymore. She's always seeking a heart,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Which is his heart, blah, blah, blah. What happened to the Witch of the Waste's heart?
It's possible that something happened to... So in the book, the Witch of the Waste does have a fire demon in the same way that Hal and Calcifer are.
No.
There is that dynamic. But here's the thing. The Witch of the Waste is no longer powerful. The fire demon ultimately who consumed her heart, I think that's the way it is in the book, just kind of like has free range to go out and do stuff. You know how Calcifer's kind of like stuck to the hearth?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is not the case for the Witch of the Waste demon.
No.
That's a demon that can go out. And that's kind of like where the climax comes.
Calcifer's like, may all your bacon burn. And hers is like, I love the nightlife. I like to boogie.
I think.
All the disco. Fudge.
I think what they're saying in the movie is that the Witch of the Waste kind of lost her power. So maybe if she had anything similar to Hal, then there's a possibility that for whatever reason, something happened. And like maybe like her fire demon is just stuck somewhere.
So anyways.
Yeah.
Sullivan starts to hone in on Sophia.
Yeah, she's like, what is it? She brings in the Witch of the Waste, who is now like, doesn't look nearly as young. She looks very old.
What happened to her? I just made her the age she actually is.
Right. And that's when Sophie clears up, like, that's why you wanted Hal here.
Yes.
So you can strip him of his power.
Yes, you're just inviting everybody here to just take from them, take.
And as she's talking,
Sophia's getting passionate. And then she starts losing her oldness because if she's not focused on herself mm-hmm. and her own appearance and her own interpretation by other people, she just is like, you're going to do this and you want to, and you're going to take advantage of somebody I care about. And blah, blah, blah. She gets younger and younger. Mm-hmm. And the Sullivan's like, I see why he likes you, Mrs. Pendragon.
And she also like says, I think you're in love with him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dark.
Yeah.
So then on cue, on cue, a plane lands outside.
Right. Well, it's like, so you can see Sophie going from this like young person to an old person as soon as she's confronted with that knowledge, and then plane outside. And who's going to show up?
It's the king, obviously.
Yeah. So, you know, when Sophie was like, oh, that's probably him, and talking about like the airplane with the giddy lady.
Uh-huh.
I was like, yeah, that probably is Hal. And this is confirmation that it was.
It probably is. But there was no lady on the back of the plane, just to be sure.
Yeah. And it's the king that shows up, and he's like, and he's being very like, you know,
he comes in, he salutes the mm-hmm. the O'Sullivan, and he walks over and is like, so
you're the mother to Wizard Pendragon, I see. You know, I've decided that we need to stop this war because we have these magical force fields on the palace that when the bombs drop, they fall on our civilians, and that's wrong.
Yeah, I'm not going to use magical forces anymore. That's a bad idea. And then O'Sullivan's like, you're so eloquent today, Your Majesty.
And then, boom, who walks in but the king, who's like, Solomon!
He's waving plans in the air, a la Oprah on a You Get a Car episode. And he's just like, I've got new plans for us to use all the magic on the people!
It's kind of great.
And she's like, oh. And he, oh, yes, yes, Your Majesty. And he turns and he looks at the other king and he's like,
what another great clone you've done.
That's the best doppelganger you've made yet.
Yeah.
And then he turns about face and leaves. And Pendragon's like, oh, he turns around.
Yeah.
He holds the facade, you gotta admit.
Yeah, because he just gets right next to Sophie, grabs his arm right around her. And now you can see that it is actually Hal.
Yes, in the uniform, but no longer the face of the king who has a mustache and all this business.
Right, it's his like actual physicality.
Yeah, not mad about it. Dark hair, blue eyes, what?
And that's when the Witch of the Waste is over by them. And like,
she ends up holding on Sophia's cloak, which is important.
Mm-hmm. Because Mrs. Solomon like cracks her staff, and then water comes gushing out of her chair.
Yeah, like, well, it looks like it's a magical wave that engulfs them all, and they seem to be able to breathe through it or whatever. But she uses it as a means to like screw with Sophia and like change Hal and like turn him into the raven creature, but with like a human face. And then he starts to rage out, and then Sophia grabs his face, and she's like, "No, she's using it to manipulate you." And then he's like, "Oh, you're right," and he like shoots them. This guy, her hat drops. Sylvan's staff stabs right through the hat into the wall just before the ceiling closes up, or maybe he bursts through the ceiling that looks like it's closed up. They burst through the atrium ceiling and out into the sky, over the side of the atrium, onto a flying bike.
That's great.
Is that concise enough?
Yeah, that's concise.
Okay. And but remember that Witch of the Waste is on Sophia's skirt, so she gets to go with them. And then also, how does the dog show up?
Okay, so we didn't mention this, but as soon as Sophie comes into the atrium, the dog comes in. Well, it's okay. I missed another thing. So the dog comes in and sits right next to Mrs. Solomon, and she's just like, oh, you're not Hal.
She's like, this is my dog, Heen. And Sophie's like, I've been talking to this dog, like talking to him like he's Hal this whole time.
Yeah.
She's like, Hal, how dare you, something, something. And he's like, meh, meh.
Yeah.
Except he's probably more like,
here's the thing. So Hal, Sophie, and the Witch of the Waste are on this flying contraption. And then Heen comes running up and then he flies with his ears.
Bum, ba, 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 bum. Heen.
And so they take off flying, but you know, the soldiers are in pursuit of them because they want to get Hal. And so they fly off, and Sophie and Hal have this interesting exchange where she was like, I'm so sorry, I can understand why you don't want to go there. And he was like, no, it's okay, I needed to show up because I fulfilled my wizardly duty, but I knew I couldn't show up unless you were there to save me.
Okay, does that not make your heart go pitter patter?
Oh, it's great.
It's one of the best. It's one of the best. I couldn't be there without you, Sophia.
You gave me strength. That is adorable.
And he leans in and says it. It's like number four of the things, like, you're my lucky charm. I couldn't do it without you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, hell. Oh, hell. Hell. Hell, you. I was just there as your mom.
And And then to ensure that they get away safely, he's like, I can give you 5 minutes of invisibility.
I don't know how to get back, Hal. I don't know how to get back.
Yeah, that ring I gave you. Just think about Calcifer with your heart and it'll take you back.
He puts a ring on her finger and tells her she's his good luck charm and puts a ring on her finger and I just feel like dying.
It was before she left at the beginning of this whole excursion that he slips the ring. That's why he gets it.
He's like, this thing will make sure that you will return safely to me.
Right.
Oh my God.
And so they, which is
a
actually,
ring and a promise. What a day.
Yeah. And so they make an escape.
How she focuses on Calcifer. A beam goes in the direction she's supposed to go. He says, I can give you 5 minutes of invisibility. He's like, good job. After like 30 seconds of flight lessons, he like does a salute to the side. He falls off to the side. She's invisible with Witch of the Waste, Antine, and they like sputter all the way back to the wastelands.
Right. And the mouth of the castle opens up wide.
She's
and
like, she's like,
I don't know how to land this thing.
Miguel, I don't know how to land this thing. And he like they're flying straight into the mouth of the, again, anglerfish looking Hal's castle. And they just crash right into it. And Mikhail's like, what? Sophia, where are you? Sophie. And the Witch of the Waste pops up and she's like, good dog. And the dog's like in her cloak and he's like, what? And then Sophie's like, I'm here, I'm fine. And he's like, Sophie, I never thought I'd see you again. And then she runs down the rubble and they embrace in a way. Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's adorable.
Oh.
Yeah. And then later that night,
she fixes beds for both of them while Hal goes off and fights all the bad guys.
And then he comes back and he's like more of a bird/person thing.
Yeah.
And he just goes right up to his room and we see Sophie, a younger version of herself. She kind of like gets up and she asks Calcifer, oh, did Hal come back?
And she sees his bird claw footprints on the ground.
So she puts on boots.
And she goes upstairs. She goes to his room. When she opens the door, it's no longer this crow's nest collection of super shiny things and like this downy bed with a super hot black haired guy on it, but like a hallway, air quotes, dirt tunnel that has those shiny things kind of embedded in these dirt walls. And it's like the stuff of nightmares.
Mm-hmm. And she goes down that and she sees this feathered thing in there. And she's like, Hal, is that you? And you can kind of see it like turn in on himself.
Lydia, here's what's broken about me as a person.
You want a project?
I think that we are all a monster. All of us are. And that to know somebody at their worst means that you will appreciate them at their best, as long as they are willing to turn from that which is devastating and turn towards that which is good. So here's the problem. You can't say we are nowhere where we were unless you were at the where we were part.
Right.
It's the Beauty and the Beast complex. Does she have Stockholm syndrome because she wants Hal real bad because he's super fancy? He just happened to be a monster. Or does she love him despite the fact that he's a monster?
Right.
He's our, okay, like we get all the way to like 85% full monster with him later on. He's only at like 65-70% monster right now. And then she's just like, I want to help you, Hal. I want to help you, with that voice of that other chick. I want to help you. And he's like, whatever he says.
Pre-Batman.
Sure, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, this is his Batman voice at this time.
Yeah.
Can either of you do a Batman voice? Do you know what he says?
I'm Batman.
He's like, I'm Crow-Man.
So where to me?
It's too late for me. I'm too much of a crow.
Yeah. And so she's just like, but Hal, I really want to help you. And he's like, how can you help me? You can't even help yourself.
She says in this scene, I love you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would like it noted, we still have probably 6 more pages of your bloody notes for this.
Maybe.
Because like normally you get it like that's the finale is that I love you. And then that solves the problem.
Right.
But she says it. How can you help me if you can't even help yourself? And then he flies away.
Mm-hmm.
And then doesn't she wake up in the bed?
Right. So like you hear the water getting turned on in the tub and then she wakes up kind of like the scene prior. And that's why I kind of think like maybe it's a dream, but maybe it is like maybe there is a level of reality there.
Mm.
So, okay. So next morning you see like the Witch of the Waste being fed by Sophie and she's just eyeing Calcifer in a weird way.
Such a nice fire.
It's very creepy.
It's a very nice fire.
And then
an old wrinkly lob of a lady who likes the fire.
They start cleaning up. They move the flying contraption out of the castle.
Yes,
Turnip Head helps.
Yes, Turnip Head Heen and Mikkel are down on the ground outside of the castle pulling with a rope. She pushes, she's like, all right, guys, here we go. And she pushes and it doesn't move at all. And then she gets frustrated and kicks it.
Yeah.
Tectonic alignment, right? And so it goes, and it starts flapping its little wings and it just shoots out of the thing. And she's like, and now there's like a hole in the back of the throat. Like,
right. And she's like, what do you remember what she says?
If I put up a curtain here, I doubt Hal will even notice.
And so that's when Hal comes downstairs and he's like looking at like, oh, Solomon's dog and the Witch of the Waste. And he like ribs Calcifer for letting the Witch of the Waste in. And Calcifer's like, I didn't. Sophie crash landed in here with her. And it was great. Mm-hmm. And then he goes out and he sees Turniphead and he's like, oh, wow, even you're on a spell. Well, we just got this really weird family. And I'm like, I love weird families.
Me too. But he's like, look, you're going to have to stay outside Turniphead because your spell is a bit too big for me. And I can only make space for the people inside the house right now.
Right.
And you're like, what? And then he goes inside and he just chalk on the ground. He does all the things, right?
Moving day.
So he sits Mikkel and Sophie and the Witch of the Waste on the dining room table. He stands in a chalk drawn thing. And then he like gets Calcifer and puts him in the thing and he holds him and he's like, wubba lubba dub dub. And then like the whole house, like one wall bulges out and pops and like creates a space. The bathroom, like
the hole fixes itself.
Yes. Like the window yeets into existence and like it all expands so that everyone has a room. Sophie has a room. The Witch of the Waste has a brand new bed by the fire.
They have an extra bathroom.
Yes, it is glorious. Although their bathroom only has a toilet and it's only two
it's
and
like
one
a half bath.
It's a one and a half bath.
Yeah.
Castle now.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, what's she going to do?
But Sophie's room looks a little bit familiar.
So he says, okay, so this, she's like, oh, it's amazing. He's like, oh, it's amazing. He's like, I made this room for you. And she's like super amazed that she's young because she's so amazed and distracted, mm-hmm. right? And she finds her room and she's like, oh, wow, why did you do this? And he's like, well, I just thought it would suit you. And she's like, I guess it would suit an old lady. And then mm-hmm. she's like instantly old again. Mm-hmm. And he's like, obviously oblivious to what he said to her.
Yeah. He then is like, Sophie, I want to show you something. And that's when he takes her to the door and he says, there's a new colored dot on here. And he flicks it to a yellow. And when he flicks it to yellow and opens up the door, and the two of them step out to this large field full of like flowers. And this is where I'm like, okay.
Right. Okay. You can dismiss Hal all you want.
I have never once called him ugly.
I didn't think you did.
I'm just saying, like, for my personal tastes, a guy who's going to like build me a house and give me a flower garden after we've had some time to get to know each other, then I'm gonna be like, okay, maybe you're higher on the list at this point.
I mean, I will say that having fallen in love with a gorgeous person, it's years later when that person is just like, by the way, I thought of you in a very romantic and intimate way. Something beautiful, something simple, something that suits you so well. And I'd give this to you.
And here's the thing. It's not just a flower garden in this immense field. It's also his childhood home that he went to when he escaped.
Yeah, I want to give you this place that I escaped to so that you can have an escape too.
Mm-hmm.
And plus on that, hey, if you ever need to, you could open a flower shop with all of these flowers around you. So it's not just you escaping. It's not just you getting away. But if you felt like you needed to take care of others, you could do that here too.
Or if you felt like you needed to have a level of independence,
you could have that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all for you.
Right.
All for you, despite being one of the most arrogant bastards.
Right. He still cares enough about Sophie to give her something that he knows she's going to enjoy. Because Sophie isn't going to be happy just sitting around doing nothing.
No.
She's going to need something that she can feel like she's you know, getting work done. And like at one point,
she's like, I feel like you're saying goodbye.
Yeah. And she's just like, I know I really want to help you, Hal, even though I know I'm not pretty. And that's when he's like, Sophie, you're beautiful. And
gag me with a spoon on that one.
It
but
was
whatever.
It was like, seriously, was that the only take you did, Christian Bale?
Is that really the delivery was bad for you?
Yeah. And then, but I mean, with Sophie, she turns from this, she's been a young woman throughout the majority of the scene, and then she reverts quickly back to an old lady.
Well, just because the words don't mean to her.
Right, because he has probably called a lot of women beautiful to get what he wants.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, he showed her a flower garden.
Yay.
But he needs to go ahead and like offer something more tangible than it.
It's a commitment to a goal. Like, I feel like you could give me, I'm an acts of service quality time person, and I feel like me and Sophia identify on this together. if you are with me through adversity and if you're with me in times of leisure, like, I feel like we are in it together. If you're like, hey, girl, you look real nice, I'll be like, you're probably lying. Hey, girl, I feel real nice when we're together. That's great, but I doubt it. You know, it is in the doing for me and Sophia. And so,
right.
So like, it's the action that you take. It's the things that you show me. So that's why, like, when he shows her this place that used to be his personal private sanctuary, and he's like, and this is for you. Well, that's an act of service. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel intimately connected to that. This is, oh, I enhanced all these flowers so that you could have something when I'm gone, if I go. That's an act of service. Like, I get behind that, you know, and then he's here with her holding hands, looking at the blue skies, walking through the fields. I'm like, that's quality time. Like, those are things I feel deep within my soul.
Right. And like in the book, when Hal and Sophie kind of come to this meeting, Sophie is pretty well head over heels for Hal at this point. Yeah. She's like met his family.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's met her family, even though she doesn't really know it. And at one point she gets frustrated when she finds out that Hal knows about the spell that she's under. But he essentially says that, you know, he's been trying to take the spell off of her and he hasn't been able to because she is in full control of like releasing herself from the spell. And he's even like mentioned, haven't you noticed how your aches and pains have been going away? I was doing that for you. So like throughout the entire book, you just really see only what Sophie sees. And then when Hal like pretty much puts everything that he has done for her that she just hasn't noticed because she's been focused on some very superficial things. Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments where you're like, oh, wow, she has been very active despite the fact that she's 90. Mm-hmm. She has, you know, been able to kind of get through some of these areas pretty well. It's still like kind of this big moment for Hal to say, but I have been helping you out in ways that I know you are going to like. It's just Sophie's not willing to really accept that maybe he cares enough about her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And at this point in the movie, I don't think we necessarily see that, but it's still one of those things where even when he said, I knew I couldn't go to the palace unless you were there to give me courage, that was still like he understands how much Sophie is making him want to be a better person.
Oh, yeah. My God. Okay, so they're in this fantasy land. They're looking at all this topiary. They see the cabin where he studied as a kid that he inherited from his wizard uncle. They're having a moment. It's super beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Warship.
Yeah. And Hal's like, oh, we shouldn't let them get away with those bombs. Whoosh.
He just waves his hand and the thing goes down. He's like, not enough to make it crash, but they're going to lose all their bombs. So the bomber goes down, but not without releasing the transformed wizards. Mm-hmm. And now we cut to the scene that they foreshadowed before where now she's 90 years old because they've had this altercation. Mm-hmm. He grabs her by the hand. He's like, here we go. And he's like, run. And he starts running fast and she starts running slow because she's 90, but she's still kicking them digits like best she can.
So at the in their first meetup, they're walking in air. And then in this moment, he's grabbed her. He has wings that poof out and she's like running with her legs in the air. And then he just like yeets her through the door.
The first one's Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers walking through the air. This one is like one of the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz holding a frozen chicken, like half thawed as it waddles through the air together.
That flying monkey loves that frozen chicken, though.
But I mean, like, yeah, as you would. I don't think Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers have the same affection a flying monkey would have for a half thawed chicken.
Yeah.
Mmm, chicken. You want to see if there's any chicken at the craft table?
Yeah, I could go for some chicken right now.
On the Vintage Video Podcast, we'll be reviewing every major film release of the 1980s on their 40th anniversaries. John enters the store now to order another can of ether. I picture him outside like Homer with the gasohol.
One for you, one for me.
I also like to think about that the kids renew their vow not to talk about the murder.
By murdering someone.
They're taking a blood oath with someone else's blood.
This stuff is 7 times more powerful than uranium. And they open up the vault that it's contained in, not wearing any kind of protective gear. Yeah.
And it's wooden crates.
Wooden crates. It's like the guys in Chernobyl picking up the graphite rocks and going, nah, because they're just rocks.
Hugging the elephant foot. Just like, oh, this thing's smooth.
It's so warm.
He turns to dial the number from the classified ad without even thinking about the numbers. We know this because we can hear his thoughts and he's talking about how AJ was right that ninjas are misdirecting him.
They're misdirecting him.
I really wish that he'd turn to the phone and been like, 6-6-5. No, that's 2-5. Vintage Video. We're rewatching the 80s so you don't have to.
What is up, everyone? Do you sometimes feel like something's missing in your life? Like there's more out there that the world has to offer? Are there things that you've always wanted to try, but for one reason or another, you haven't tried them yet? If so, then the Fun with Friends podcast is just for you. The Fun with Friends podcast explores what happens when you stop overthinking and just start doing. It's a podcast about pushing yourself, trying new things, and just getting out there. Whether that's traveling to a new place, checking items off of your bucket list, or starting your own business, we cover it all. So get out there, try something new, and have some fun.
Hold on, they crash through the door of the cabin where they switch it, and now they're not in the field anymore.
So later that night, the Witch of the Waste is, you know, getting tucked into bed by Sophie, and she's like, oh, you've been sighing all day, you must be in love, and oh, you know, I just love young men's hearts, they're just so delicious, and I'm like, creepy.
Mm-hmm. And then Sophie pretends like she doesn't, and then she sighs, and then she goes and sits on the bed, and she's like,
damn it.
Dang it, she knows.
Yeah. And so next day, who should arrive?
Oh, is it Sophia's mother?
It is. Sophie's mother arrives in a automobile of some sort.
An automobile?
Yes.
An automobile?
Yes. And so she goes to the store and she knocks on the door.
Everything looks so different, Sophia.
Yeah. And then she sees Sophie as an old lady. And what is her reaction?
Oh my gosh, you're so old.
Oh, Sophie.
Like, she's like, oh my, look, I just got married. I'm super rich. You'll never have to clean somebody's house again. You can be completely useless, but at my house.
It's almost like knowing how everything plays out with the mom in the scene. It's like her attempt to try and get Sophie to go with her.
Yeah, I feel sympathy for the mom, but I don't feel empathy. Or maybe it's reverse that. I don't know. I don't like...
I feel apathy towards the mom. I just don't really care about her as a character, but it's important for her to stop in because she leaves her purse, which has this like spell in it and a cigar.
Okay, so what happens is she's like, I can't stay. Sophia goes to walk her out to the car. She's left her little purse. Witch of the Waste, who hasn't shown much mobility beyond being able to hold onto a cloak through metaphysics, is like, oh. And then she like scampers over and grabs the purse, runs back to her chair in front, the ubiquitous chair in front of Calcifer. She opens it up. She pulls out this worm looking thing. She's like a peeper worm or whatever.
Yeah. Solomon, you could do better than that.
Tosses it in Calcifer's face. Calcifer chomps it. He's like, oh, and he tamps down super low. And then she throws a whole bunch of stuff out of the purse that's not important. She pulls out a cigar, starts smoking it. Smells terrible. Nobody likes it. Right. I thought it was magical the first like three times I've seen this film. It's not. It just stank.
Yeah. And outside, Sophie's saying goodbye to her mom and Markle's there. And he's just like, Sophie, are you going to leave us? And she's just like, no, I'm not going to leave you.
And then he hugs her so hard. He's like,
I don't want you to go.
Because we're family. Yeah, we're family now. And I'm like, done deal.
Yeah.
Roll credits.
And then later at the night, Calcifer is very much weak. Sophie's trying to get a flame up, but it's just smoke. And you have
bellows on Calcifer and it's not working.
Right. And the Witch of the Waste is smoking a cigar. And she's
forever,
just
it feels like.
She's like, can you just please put that out? Markle, go crack a window. And the Witch of the Waste is like, I wouldn't do that. That's going to make Solomon find us faster. And it's like, then why are you smoking the cigar?
Don't deny an old witch her pleasures.
I will deny you everything.
So then Hal shows up. He's like super beleaguered.
Like the way that it shows up in the movie is as soon as Markle opens up the window, Sophie's like, Markle, don't. And then it cuts to bombs in the airships dropping down. Because what you see in the exchange earlier with Sophie's mom is a bunch of people leaving the city because they know an attack is imminent. Ugh. And so when the bombs drop, they're getting dropped on in different areas. And Sophie like actually goes out to the courtyard and she looks, and as she's seeing some of these bombs drop down, she sees Hal coming down with them.
Yeah. So she's like, we need to fix this business.
And Hal's riding one of them, and you see like the bombs go off, and then he comes in and he fixes Calcifer by taking the stuff out of him because the two are connected, basically.
Yeah. He holds a hand over him, makes the dark magenta poof out of him so that he's a healthy red fire again.
Right. And Hal says to the Witch of the Waste, was that cigar a gift from Madame Solomon? She was just like, oh, well, I mean, maybe if you stay around long enough, we can talk about it. And he was like, yeah, I got stuff to do. Maybe we'll talk later.
He says, I would like nothing more than that. But for right now, I need you to put the cigar out and freaking let me figure the rest of this shit out.
He holds out his hand and the Witch of the Waste just takes the cigar and like just shoves it in there.
Yeah, she snubs it out in his palm. And no lie, because he's a little feathery right now, I'm like, all right, let me give you a couple choices, Jen. Huh? Mm. Mm. Mm-hmm.
So Hal is going outside because he needs to like try and like guard where they're staying. And Sophie's like, no, don't go. You don't need to run. You just need to stay in here and we need to go. And we need to go elsewhere. And he's just like, I don't want to run anymore because I found
finally something worth staying for.
Yeah.
Yes. But okay. Totally like our friend Judy from the last film, this is a bad time to decide to change what your should I stay or should I go now status.
Right. And like Sophie, like you get all of this attack that's going on. So Sophie goes to the waist. She takes the dial on the door and switches it to the waist. And she can see down into the town exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. And she sees.
She's like, oh, that's our house. It's about to get bombed the crap out of.
Right.
We got to get the house unattached to the waist. Not the waist. We need to get unattached to the town.
Right. So that way Hal stops protecting us.
Right.
And so she like bundles up the Witch of the Waste and she's like, find time for Hal to, you know, discover himself. She specifically says, I prefer Hal as a coward. Because she wants him to live.
You know what? Not mad about it.
Yeah.
She says, Markle, take the witch outside. I'm going to grab... Okay, and Turniphead's already outside. Mm-hmm. She puts... she's like, Kelsifer, I'm going to take you outside. He's like, you can't do that. Only Hal can move me. She's like, I think I can do it. He's like, okay, maybe you could do it. So she grabs the shovel, puts him in it. She starts walking towards the door. He's like, wait. You got to go booty out first because I should be the last thing to leave this thing because right. I'm holding it all together right now. She's like, cool, tight, awesome idea. So she backs out the door. And then as soon as she steps outside, the whole moving castle, because they're in the waste, is like,
bleh. Yeah, just like crashes down, has nothing holding it up anymore.
A testimony to the design. Little bits and pieces fall apart and break, as well as this beautiful scenery that is just gorgeous throughout the entire film. The castle itself has so much detail that when it shuts down, you're like, because it's so much a character even mm-hmm. within the film. When it shuts down, you're like, oh.
Yeah, it's sad.
But that's okay, because here's the thing. Take it away, give it right back. And that's the hallmark of good movie for me. So she's like, okay, we're disconnected. We got to get back in there.
So she gets help with Turniped to go ahead and find a way through.
And they do. And they find this place. Probably it looks like the basement, but maybe it's just everything shoved around a whole bunch. It's
right.
Drippy. She throws Kelsifer onto this big rounded slab that kind of looks like the hearth.
Yeah.
And then she starts finding wood because everything's broken to shit. And she starts throwing it on there. And he's like, I don't know what I could do. I can't do it. Kelsifer's like, I just can't do anything right now. She's like, we need you to get this thing moving now.
We need to take it to Hal so he will stop protecting us in the town.
Right. So she starts throwing wood there. He's like, I can't do it. She's like, you could totally do it. He's like, only if you gave me something. And she's like, what? And he's like, how about your eyeballs? And she's like, no. And he's like, she goes, how about this? And she holds out her beautiful shiny silver locks.
She's a younger woman, so her braid is a lot longer.
It's past almost to her belly button. And he's like, oh, or okay. Your heart. And she's like, no, no, no. Yeah. He cuts off her braid with his fire hands. Mm-hmm. He eats it. He's like, ugh. And she's like, I've always liked your spark. And he's like, I love it when you say that, bitch. Except he doesn't say that.
Yeah.
He just zooms up really big.
Right.
And he like lifts up the entire castle. Parts of it start falling off. That's not a big deal. We just need to get like the four of us. Four of us? Five of us.
Yeah.
We're going to give the five of us to Hal. And she's like, you're amazing. He's like, imagine what I could have done with your eyeballs.
Or your heart. And
that's when the witch goes, that's it.
Yeah, she's like, you're Hal's heart. And so she goes in, what is it? Okay, so they're like, they're trudging. The castle is just like this little mini version of itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Still has like the eyes, the cannons for eyes.
Now it looks like Big Bertha from Super Mario Brothers. It looks
right.
like the fish. With legs, like chicken legs yeah. on a Big Bertha is what it looks like.
Yeah, and so they're going through and then the Witch of the Waste comes in and she like goes for Calcifer's heart and Sophie sees that and there's like, there's...
No!
When the Witch of the Waste grabs Calcifer from the hearth, that's when things start crumbling a little bit more, but it lights her on fire. And Sophie's just like, you have to give me back his heart or you're going to burn up. And she's like, but it's mine. And it's like, no, it's not.
So
it never was.
Sophia starts getting catched on fire and she's like, you're going to burn up. Gonna burn up. And she's like, what am I gonna do? So she steps away from the Witch of the West. She grabs a bucket of water, throws it on the Witch of the West.
Right.
Dousing Calcifer and the witch, putting out all the fire. This is a problem.
Everything is crumbling at this point. Sophie like grabs Heen as things are falling apart, as the last of the castle that's moving
mm-hmm.
is just a slab of wood and two chicken legs.
And Sophia falls away with Heen to the side that's no longer mobile. Turnip head, Mikhail.
Markle.
Markle. Sorry, Mikhail. Markle.
Michael in the book.
Yeah. So it's understandable why you.
He's
confused.
Tim Tom. Yeah. Turnip Head.
And Wow. Witch of the Waste.
Witch of the Waste. Wow. They all go off on the teeter tottering chicken leg platform. But Sophia ends up in a pit with most of the debris of the castle.
Right. And she is in tears, crying.
She cries onto her fancy ring.
Yeah. Heen sees the light on the ring and he's like, oh, you got to do something.
He starts harping and harping at her until she realizes that the tears on the ring have started lighting the way the same way that it lit with fire-ish light before. Now it's leading her to a door. It's the door.
Right.
From the castle. Except now it's going into the blackness. So she goes into the blackness.
And where does she come out to but Hal's childhood cabin that he used as an escape, but it's very dark. There's the muddy fields and she sees
these shooting stars that start pinging off the ground. Now it's a mud land. So like they ping into the water and disappear. They ping into the mud and they disappear. These things are going pew, choo, choo, poo, pew, choo, choo, poo.
And then she sees a little boy out in the distance.
He's got dark hair.
Yeah.
Little poet's shirt, little high-waisted pant.
Yeah.
And that's not unfamiliar.
And she sees a shooting star get caught by this little boy, and she starts running to him because she knows that this is Hal.
And you see Hal speaking to this little ball of light that he's caught, and he nods and something, and then he goes and he drinks this ball of light, and then he pukes up a ball of fire, and then, sorry to simplify, you should watch this movie, not gonna lie.
Because it's gorgeous how it actually plays out. It's not actually puking.
It makes sense. He he puts it in his mouth and swallows it down. He leans forward and it comes out of his mouth again. And then she's like, oh, shit, the star thing is Calcifer this whole time. Mm-hmm. And like these dancing circle light guys with like these dandelion looking sparkler heads are around everybody. And then like the ring on her finger keeps getting tighter and tighter and then it disintegrating.
Yeah.
And it eventually pops away. And as soon as it pops away, a black hole opens up underneath her. And she's like, Hal, I get it now. Hal, Calcifer, I get it. And she's like, they turn and look. She's like, it's me. It's Sophie. And the worst line in the entire film, I swear to God, is "Find me in the future."
And all I'm thinking is, "Let's do the time warp again."
It's just a Hal to the left, a Calcifer to the right, a witch of the waist to the tips, and bring your Heen in tie. And it's a Calcifer.
Did you see that, Sean? Did you see that Sean suggested shock treatment?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen shock treatment. If I have, it's been too long and too many illicit substances ago.
Okay. Well, that was my way of diverging.
Not singing Rocky Horror fake offs.
I was just trying to get you back into the story.
Let's do the time warp again. She walks.
And so she.
Heen starts going through the door. He, like, as they fall through space, he gets traction. She follows him. She's like, I'm sorry, Heen. I'm trying so hard. And she can't stop crying.
And she is in an airy environment or an open environment without any ground. And she starts walking because that's what she's been taught to do.
Yeah. She gains traction, gets through the door, walks out. She sees big feathery bird form. He is now at like 90, 95%. Evil form.
Right. He just has his
face. We're talking about Hal now.
Really showing. He's got one leg as a bird.
She's like, Hal, I know what to do now. I know what to do. And she goes over and she kisses him on the mouth and his eyes don't move. And you're like, oh, shit, he's real f***ed.
Yeah. She's like, I need you to take me to Calcifer.
Can you take me to Calcifer? And he puts out one big freaking bird leg and she steps onto it. And Heen steps onto it too, which is super cute. Nice detail. And then he flies all the way to the Wackety contraption.
Mm-hmm. And then when he lands on there, he like kind of collapses and he's back into his human form. And
but you know he's like close to death.
Right.
And she walks over to Witch of the Waste, wow, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I need his heart. And she's like, no, it's mine. And she goes, you have a big heart. I need this.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to me, please.
And when she still refuses, Sophie goes in and gives her a hug.
And then she does give her the wow, gives her the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, thank you. And she's like, be good to it. And then there's a really quick, okay. And then she takes this little blue ball of light over to Hal. And she opens up her hands. And then Calcifer's little face pops up on the blue heart.
And he's like, I'm so tired. And she's like, I know what I need to do. If I give Hal back his heart, will you die? And he's like, I don't think so. Not if you did it. I mean, you splashed water on us, which she had threatened that like twice. So the callback.
And then she actually did it.
Right. But she didn't do it out of spite. She did it to try and save someone.
Right. Instead of putting what I would have done incorrectly, even though I've had so much emergency training, I would have shoved the ball in his mouth, mm-hmm. which would probably have been a choking hazard.
Yeah.
She takes both hands and places it on his chest and like kind of like pushes it in. And then there's like a big shining moment. And then he wakes up.
And Calcifer kind of like sparks out of his chest. And then he comes out and he's like, I'm alive, I'm alive. And he swooshes around him and everything.
Yes.
And then Hal wakes up.
Yes. And she has managed to kiss everybody. She kisses the Witch of the Waste on the face to say thank you for the heart. What does, oh, so then because Calcifer is no longer out in the world running the legs of the mm-hmm. thing, the legs fall off the oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I almost forgot
okay.
this. This reminds me of so much though. Okay, so the legs fall off of the rickety walking chicken leg platform they're on, right? So now they're just skidding down one of the side of the hills, and then Turnip Face is like, oh shit, this is my time to shine. Mm-hmm. And he jumps in between the sliding platform and the rocky hillside. His stick just degrades. Like he's like 12 feet tall, right? He gets down to like 3 feet tall. He has nothing but torso and turnip head and top hat. And then they stop right at the edge of the hill and he's almost dead. And he's in Sophia's arm and she's like, Turnip Head, you did such a good job. And you'll have to watch the movie to hear the actual dialogue because by this time the movie's nearly mm-hmm. an hour and 50 minutes long. And she's like, you're such a good Turnip Head. I love you so much, Turnip Head, in a romantical sort of way. You're such a good Turnip Head. And she kisses him on the face.
And then he like starts like, you know.
He
like,
starts shaking in, and he does he, a like, little flip. He does at least mm-hmm. one little flip.
And then he turns into a handsome prince.
In a dapper dandelion yellow tuxedo.
Yeah, but Sophie's not interested in him. Sophie is interested
in the Witch of the Waste. Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. The Witch of the Waste, though, goes, I know that spell. The kiss from your one true love will solve it. And they're like, it looks like your one true love is in love with somebody else. And he's like, cool, ta-ta-ta. I'm going to solve this war. I'm going to come back and fix this. It's fine. I'm going back. If there's one thing I do know, hearts change. Roll credits.
Okay, so here's my whole...
It's not the end.
Here's...
okay. How much more is left?
It's literally... Okay, so what? We're going to finish this off. Heen contacts Madame Sullivan.
Because he's not talked to... Okay, the dog, Heen, has not talked to Madame Sullivan the entire time. She's like, you should have checked in sooner. And he's like...
and then, she's like, you traitor.
Because now he's their dog and he only checked in the once to tell her to eat it.
Mm-hmm. And then everybody's kind of surrounded and
happy looking into the sunset sort of moment.
And you see the spark come back and it's Calcifer.
She's like, oh, Calcifer, what's going on? I thought you were free.
And he's like, oh, I just thought I would miss you guys. Also, it looks like rain.
She's like, all right. Yeah. You little fire demon.
And now we roll credits. And so I want to talk about the scarecrow. So this is how I fixed it in my head.
Okay.
So Turnip Head goes, does his thing, and then he comes back, and they just have a three-way. I mean, you want to solve love triangles?
You just made me heen at that. I was like...
I'm just saying, you could just solve it so quickly by just having a three-way.
You know what? The solution to your problem is polyamory.
Seriously.
Okay, so not super mad about it, but like...
I love that romance movie.
I mean, okay, so how I solved it
mm-hmm.
was that he came back, and then because the Witch of the Waste was flirting with him, was like, I'd love for you to try to come back and steal her heart, big boy. And then she like gives him a wink. I wanted her to like somehow revert to young again, and then for her to be like super his deal. And then like she mm-hmm. would be like this big, strong, fancy lady, and he would be like this super fancy femboy, and then they would just like totally have a thing. And then like, and then Sophie and Hal would have like this total like whatever's normal for them sort of thing where she's like still kind of butch and he's still kind of like femme. But that's fine too, because I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't mind that at all. Mm-hmm. I'm a little ambiguous apparently according to a test I took on Facebook recently, but that's cool. I'm cool with androgyny. I just think that I'm a monogamist, so like I tend to bend that way, but also like I don't reject your polyamory ending. I just think maybe it should be
more monogamous.
No, I can see where you're going with this. I just kind of feel like it's going to be Sophia being more traditional, right? And then Hal being like, he's more inclined to be ambiguous, so maybe, and here's how some dynamics work. Maybe she's monogamous, he's polyamorous, and he just happens to have multiple partners aside from her who remains monogamous. But he only fools around with Turnip Head because he thinks Witch of the Waste is gross.
Sure.
Seems like you could find a lot of fan fiction about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to go down that rabbit hole. You'd get three stories in and you'd be like...
We should go down a different rabbit hole talking about our shocked and applaud moment. So, Naomi, what's your shocked?
I have never watched this movie and not been in absolute, and we didn't talk about it a lot. I mentioned it, but I have not been without awe to the detail of the aesthetics of this film, from the character development visually to the background scenes, mm-hmm. the landscaping, the detail in the accoutrement. You'll have a still scene, but then they'll have flags in the background. And sometimes, like Scooby-Doo style, you'll see like, oh, that door's going to open, but the mm-hmm. rest of it's all still.
Yeah.
Like none of that. It looks pristine a decade and a half later. And I cannot stress how gorgeous it is in terms of like little minutiae detail and like things from like people get excited and their hair changes. Like, I don't know about you, but my scalp changes if I get excited. Like, my hair does raise a bit. I can't get over it. There are, from my estimate, over 1,000 different character studies between peoples in different scenes. So if you stare at the bombing scene, where they pan through a crowd, they go past like the Witch of the Waste dude, but then they pan across the crowd. There's no repeats. There's no the same guy. It's all different looking people in a very very homogenous group. It's very easy to be like, oh, there's a brown hair guy. 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 And they've got, this guy has a goatee, but that guy doesn't. And that's all you get, like black eyes all the way down, mm-hmm. just because those are dominant traits and they're easy to reproduce. We're talking about a Eurocentric sort of cast. I mean, it's a European book mm-hmm. made by Japanese people and then reinterpreted for an American or English-speaking audience. And it is gorgeous. It is nearly, I cannot think, without flaw mm-hmm. in terms of like the ugly people maybe aren't all that ugly. You're not getting some, I'm ranting pretty hard about this, but like I'm just saying that visually I can find nothing upsetting about this film.
Right. So you wouldn't have a shocked moment.
Oh, are you? Did we say shocked first? That was my applaud moment.
Okay, that was your applaud. Okay.
I applauded. Okay. I was so excited about my applaud that I cannot.
I'm just saying there probably will come a day when we watch a movie and we just won't have anything negative to say about it at all. So that's why I was asking.
No. I just applauded because I was so excited about it. I finally had one of my two prepared before we started. Yeah. And then I like totally like.
No, that's okay.
Applauders, please slap that and reverse it. Watch, let me work it. Let me throw it back and reverse it. I did my applaud moment first.
That's okay.
Now you guys can follow suit. How about you applaud first and we'll shocked second.
Okay. Well, my applaud was how they showed Sophie being in control over the spell, which is kind of a bit of a spoiler for the book. And it doesn't show up until at the very end of the book. So I was happy that they showed that because it would have changed the dynamic of the movie if they hadn't shown that at all. And it was this big reveal.
Yeah. But like if it could have been subtle enough that some people with recognition issues could not have picked up on it. Mm-hmm. Like the more I watch this film, the more I see it. I'm like, oh, she's young now. Oh, she's old now.
There are moments in the film where I'm not sure if this was actually a creative choice, but there are moments where you can tell she looks very old uh-huh. and then she looks slightly younger and then uh-huh. she looks really young.
Yeah.
And so you can just kind of see this like whole like ebb and flow.
Yes.
So that's what's great about movies is you got this like, especially animation, you can like change every single cell.
Is she far away or is she middle-aged right now? No, yeah. It's great. It's part of the aesthetic thing. We're mm-hmm. on the same page.
Yeah.
Applaud, applaud, applaud.
Yeah. What about you, Jen?
Well, there's a lot of movies and TV that claim to be a modern day fairy tale, and so many of them fail mm-hmm. at it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a modern day fairy tale. It borrows from other fairy tales in order to tell that tale, but it stands the test of time enough that it's been referenced in pop culture, even though an American pop culture, even though it's a foreign film.
Mm-hmm.
Referenced in Simpsons.
Well, that's a Sean fact, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was also referenced in Shin Chan.
Which was another Sean fact, but Shin Chan is so awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a same state reference. It's not really mm-hmm. foreign like the Simpsons reference. But I like the aesthetic of the animation.
Mm-hmm.
It fits very well with the storytelling. You don't feel like the animation is separate from the story. Sometimes you get a feeling like somebody else is under control, creative control of the animation than whoever wrote the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with, you know, I've never read the book, but I'm okay with this being a separate piece than the book itself. You know, the author kind of says, you know, that the film is one thing, it's not the book, but I still like it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the author's okay with it being a completely different thing, it gives me a little bit more, you know, it gives me permission to enjoy it on a different level than I would be if I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
100%. Why don't you lead off our shocked moments then?
I don't necessarily think that you have to raise the importance of a centrally feminine figure by maybe demonizing isn't the right word, but lowering the character level of men around that prominent female character. Like in the very first scene, we see two soldiers that are very oppressive against this woman.
Bring it back, applauders.
Yeah.
She looks even cuter when she's scared. Fall off a cliff.
Right.
And so, and it's not just that. Like, war is a very central theme to this, prominently because the director was very anti-Iraq war.
Sean Vack.
Yeah. So this, 2003 was sort of our introduction into Iraq. 2004 was when the original release was in Japan, and then 2005 for us. So there's a very dominant theme of a feminine or female character trying to survive in a very masculine patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I really fully support and enjoy those stories. But it sort of felt like at times the only way that they felt like they could lift up the feminine character was to devalue or maybe dehumanize some of the male
characters.
Maybe
infantize.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like with the king and Mrs. Solomon, like she is like very capable. She's very like, oh, this is what we're going to do. She's kind of she seems to be just about as power hungry as the king is when he comes in and he's all like happy about bombs. But he is like essentially an idiot and she is the smart one in that moment.
She's definitely calling the shots.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind me piggybacking off yours to my shocked moment. Sorry, I reversed them for you guys. But my shocked moment is an issue I have with, and you can start plugging your ears as soon as I say the next two words, Star Wars. I have trouble following war narratives. I do okay in a history class because it's very much like XYZ. This power, conflicted over this thing, and then this other things might have contributed and blah, blah, blah. But within a war narrative inside of a movie, I get distracted by characters. So all I really care about in this movie is Hal and Sophie and Heen and Mikkel and the Waste and to a lesser degree Sullivan and the King and that little girl who got a blessing for her dad's sails. Like if I see her face and I know what's going on, like I care. But if you're like, War to the North. I'm like, I don't know where North is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, they have the Eastern Seaboard. I'm like, I don't know where that is, and I don't know what's special about that. Right. And they're just closing in on the, and I'm like, I didn't pick that up. I was waiting for Sophie to be like, and I love you, and I kiss you on the face. And it's not that I'm obsessed with the personal lines. It's just that the subtext of the overarching war is lost on me. So when we start talking, for my example, Star Wars, and you're just like, well, yeah, the rebellion, something, something. And I'm like, but remember when Han said, I know, I know. Like, that was so good. You know, yeah. Like, I get stuck on these clever little storyline tactics, but it's not the same thing as following an overarching narrative.
Right. So the war is not that prominent in the book. It's always like hinted that they're going to be going to war, but it's never like at the forefront. It's just more like this could definitely happen unless we find the guy who's missing. And if we find
I've seen this movie at least three times and I was like, oh, right. He solves it by existing.
Yeah. So it's Hayao Miyazaki and all of his films seem to be very anti-war. Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, Princess Mononoke. Those have some very heavy war themes.
Fireflies one?
Grave of the Fireflies?
Yeah.
That wasn't by Hayao Miyazaki. That was by Studio Ghibli.
Oh, okay. So like connected, yeah. But not the same. But right. Also, if you take the Grave of the Fireflies poster,
mm-hmm.
It's dark, right? Mm-hmm. If you turn up the brightness on it, there's a bomber where the fireflies are above them.
Oh.
So like it's heavily war-themed too. So like that's why I draw the line between them. But mm-hmm. I can see it over and over again.
Yeah.
War is bad. Like fire is bad.
But it kind of also makes me think of like how much has World War II and the bombs dropping on Hiroshima and Nagasaki affected Japanese culture.
I'm sure like tons and tons.
Yeah, like the pamphlets coming down. You know that I'm pretty sure that's something that Americans did in Japan during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still going to be fresh and in their culture. It's still something that's going to be very prevalent. And it's still, so it's like I can kind of forgive the war message and the heavy-handedness because it makes sense that it's there in their culture.
And I think the thing that's most compelling, and I suppose it's what it's kind of hinting, is that the lives that were affected the most were the lives least involved. So mm-hmm. If you were just a hat maker in the middle of some random suburb in the middle of pretend France, Japan, right? You're just living your life, being simple, trying to be content, feeling somewhere in the middle that you should be greater, but not knowing where you fit into the entire thing, which is just what human existence is, right? But then all of a sudden, everything's on fire around you. And then where do you find yourself in all of that?
Right.
That makes sense to me. But I still can't tell you what happened on such and such a date with such and such troops mm-hmm. and how many there were and like what exactly.
Yeah.
Until I'm there and it's visceral. You can't hint. You can't hint to me.
Mm-hmm.
What is your shocked moment, Lydia?
Well, it doesn't have to do with anything nearly as deep as you guys were talking about.
War? What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
My shocked moment had to deal with Christian Bale's voice acting. Seriously, you wanted to be in this movie? You should have acted like you wanted to be in this movie. It looks like you phoned it in, Christian.
You made me heen all over Christian Bale. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to be mean, but like when I was like the Japanese subbing, the original Japanese voice actor.
We talked about sub versus dub on this.
Is like he goes from like being very, the thing about Hal Jenkins is that he goes from being very solemn to being very joyous, literally on the flip of a switch. So you need to find an actor who can thread that needle. And I just don't think Christian Bale can pull it off. Sorry, dude. Hashtag not sorry. It like took me out. Everybody else, like the like Emily Mortimer, Gene Simmons, not kiss Gene Simmons, like Blythe Danner is in this. And like just a stellar group of like even Josh Hutcherson is adorable. And Billy Crystal, like it would have been great if they could just find someone who actually had chemistry with Billy Crystal. And I don't think that Christian Bale does because they have like a friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mine's
yeah.
not super deep. It's very superficial.
That's okay. I will tell you that Christian Bale's voice in this gives me the tingles.
Okay.
But that being said, it has nothing to do with his acting.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, that's a nice masculine voice. I'm down, right? But I wasn't like, oh, what fine acting. Like, what a stellar performance. I was just like, that voice is a good flavor. In the same way that I'd be like, ooh, I like chocolate, but then not think about the application.
In the words of Hal Jenkins from the book, he shouldn't be doing things in halves. Sorry. That's a joke for people who've read the book.
Leave it in. Leave it in, guys.
So I think that's it.
You guys, I feel like we have fully, I mean, like, unless we got some Sean facts we need to throw out there. We're hoping for some Sean fix. I'm kind of hoping to twist Sean's arm into every part of an episode doing just corrections for that part.
Right.
If you hear anything you'd like us to correct, send it to shockedandapplaud@gmail.com. We're going to forward that to Sean so he can put it in Sean Fix because I don't know if I can emotionally handle it after recording all of this. We, I think, are all in agreement that it's great to have Sean aboard.
Yes.
It's great to have Lydia, Jen, and myself aboard.
Yes.
I think that it is fantastic that every one of you have listened to this episode.
Wonderful.
Look at you looking so good today.
Yeah.
Laughing a little bit at people yelling about grown people yelling about cartoons.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Until October's episode, I am Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you for listening.
You've reached the conclusion of our walkthrough of the Studio Ghibli film, Howl's Moving Castle. Thanks for dancing through the clouds with us, through every fantastic scene of this animated classic. We're reaching our all-time milestone of 2,500 downloads this week. And we couldn't be more thrilled to celebrate this success with you. We hope that you've enjoyed what we've created as much as we have. Speaking of celebrations, Geek Exploration Podcast just celebrated their 2-year show anniversary. and I've been really enjoying their discussion of film and pop culture. And Real Talk, a movie podcast, just celebrated 3,500 downloads. Way to go! You can find links to these shows in this episode's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and can't be a pigeon, I'm too flamboyant for that, Jen. We'd like to thank you for making this episode the most downloaded episode we've had in over a year. This is due largely to the amount of liking and sharing you provide of our release notifications on Facebook, using Shocked and Applaud, and Twitter and Instagram, using @ShockedApplaud. We rely heavily on word of mouth to reach new applauders, and appreciate your continued passionate support for us on social media. We're 2 weeks away from October's episode, and it's one of my favorite freaky films from my own childhood. We'll be back on October 6th to deliver the goods. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!